The website is irishholocaust.org. The name of the book is, excuse me, Ireland 1845 to 1850. The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It Perfect. And Chris, I just want to say, I'm sorry, I just get very emotional. You are such a noble individual who is so, and you mentioned, and you didn't do it, you weren't trying to promote yourself or anything. You just simply said that you didn't want to make any money off the book. And given the things that you've suffered, incarceration, and all of the things that have been done to you for doing what you're doing, makes you such a noble individual. And I just so respect you and what you're doing. And just my love and my hugs to you. It's just, I don't know what
more. It's very kind of you to say so, Deanna, but I must say that my wife and I are a team. What one does, we both do. And also, none of us are always as good as we are at our best. And even doing what we're doing, we're not as good as we could be. And we never measure up all the time, you see. So hagiographies are not a good idea, I think.
Yes, but you and Mary, you've given so much time and effort, and so many people would never go to the effort that you've gone to make it known in your native land exactly what happened. They would not be doing what you've done. You've basically devoted your life to the truth, and that's a very noble thing for you and for Mary. You're just a great team.
I think that all ordinary people, we naturally oppose genocide, and maybe we particularly do not like covered up genocides, concealed genocides, and that's what this is. And there are others, and we have work to do on our own governmental policies. And just during the week, it's last week now, I wrote to our two U.S. congresspeople, our two U.S. senators, Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin, and to our congressman, in this case, as Congressman Danny Davis. And let me back up and say, when I was in the service stationed in Fort Lee, Virginia, before I went to France, Fort Detrick, Maryland was nearby. We all knew at the time that that's where America makes its biological weapons of mass destruction. Yes. They are associated with the Wuhan laboratory in China. Scientists go from one to the other. And in fact, Trump recalled or canceled a $2 to $3 million loan to the Wuhan biological laboratory just earlier this very year. So there's an American connection to Wuhan. But the question I asked to our two U.S. senators and congressmen was, given United States research into gain of function, and gain of function is the phrase used to describe the increase of lethality of viral research, what is the connection between the United States research into gain of function and the same government's claim to be defending us against COVID-19? I got no answer.
Of course not. Because they are not responsive. They are not... They have no loyalty to the people they supposedly represent. They have loyalties to Big Pharma. And when you consider what is coming down the pike with Bill Gates and his his objective to vaccinate everybody worldwide.
And chip us all.
Yes, and his father was in charge of Planned Parenthood. He is for getting rid of people, depopulating the planet, and by vaccines. And certainly he's made his mark in India with the, what was it, which vaccine, the polio vaccine? 47,000 children developed polio after he went over and graciously offered them a vaccine, which they didn't need. But this is not a new thing. When the U.S. invaded the Philippines in 1898, they insisted that the Filipinos be vaccinated for smallpox, a disease that they had never experienced, had no history of smallpox until after they were vaccinated. And then there were two major epidemics and a lot of deaths. And so when we approach the representatives, we need to understand that they are really working for Big Pharma. There are probably 10 lobbyists from Big Pharma that are constantly in the halls of Congress passing out money or trips or whatever. And normal people go to Washington, D.C. to supposedly serve, quote unquote, the public. They go as normal individuals and they come back millionaires. And how does that happen? It happens because they're in the pockets of the lobbyist.
How very, very sad for our country.
Yes.
There's another question I think we should all be asking. I don't happen to know anyone who died of COVID. And this is a strange pandemic in which there are so few deaths. Now, let's take one sampling of 535 members of Congress. Of any 535 people anywhere in the states, during a pandemic, what percentage would die? 5%, 10%? I think we should have questions of how many congressmen have died of COVID-19.
Oh, my. Well, if you've had a cold, see, a cold would test positive for coronavirus. And yes. A virus, if you look at the germ theory, which is fraudulent to begin with, a virus is not a living thing. It's not something that people catch. You can have another problem, another infection that you could, if you wanted, take antibiotics for. But a virus is something that you just chicken soup and stay in bed for a day. It's not something that you would want to get a deadly vaccine for. And certainly not something that you would have to be forced to wear a mask, which limits your oxygen.
Exactly.
Breathing in your own germs. Yes. It's dangerous. People are going to get sick from wearing the masks.
But they'll soon get the economy is going to it is suffering right now very, very badly. In fact, this, I'm afraid, is not going to end well at all. We have a major, for example, why is the United States government giving financial incentives to hospitals to mention COVID-19 in the cause of death?
Well, they get paid for it, and so the hospital.
Why is the government paying them?
Well, it's like the hospitals who are extracting organs. If a person signs up to be an organ donor and they go to the hospital, they don't realize that you have to be dead before the organs are viable. So you sign up to be an organ donor at the DMV when you get your driver's license. You get into an accident. They take you to a trauma center. They extract your organs while you're alive. And the hospital makes $11.2 million. And so the hospital is certainly in bed with Big Pharma. In fact, if you look at the whole healthcare system, since Rockefeller entered the scene way back in 1910 or so with the Flexner Report and all of that, they decided that they were going to, instead of looking at normal, natural methods of healing and letting your immune system do what it was designed to do, they thought, okay, we'll cut, burn, and poison, or use vaccines. And so the whole medical system was taken over. And then when you had the Affordable Health Care Act, which everybody thought, oh, this is wonderful, we're going to get access to health care. No, the government is going to get access to your body. They are going to be able to tell you if you have something wrong with you, okay, this is what you're going to have. You're going to take this treatment or else. So it's incremental. Laws are passed and people think, oh, this is a wonderful law. And then they find that it's really detrimental to yeah. whatever the law is stating. And people don't understand that. They always make all the laws seem very beneficial to people. But you have to look at, you have to read beneath the lines. You have to read, figure out exactly what it says. And we know that Congress doesn't even write most of those laws. Those laws are written by, probably Big Pharma writes a lot of the laws, and then they just get somebody in Congress to represent or to present the law, and then everybody signs it because, oh, they like Pelosi or they like somebody else. So they're going to sign on, and then Pelosi she's so stupid. She gave it away. She says, well, we're going to have to sign this bill so we can find out what's in it. Yes, duh!
Yes.
So really, Congress is, they're just a bunch of figureheads, okay, that people have come to believe in, and they're just what they are, figureheads. They are representing corporate America, period.
And then how can we get it back, I wonder? Can it be gotten back?
I'm not sure. I don't know how that would happen, because first of all, the ignorance of the population is such that, well, of course, the media is totally controlled. There are 15 billionaires that own the entire media. And so how do we get it back? People have to be informed. And if people Yes. are getting all of their news from the media, they're getting all of their information, their education from government schools, how are they going to get it back unless they become somebody like you who actually investigates and looks at things and is curious about why certain things happen? And most people aren't going to do that. They're going to think, oh, that person is a conspiracy theorist, or that person is crazy, and oh, she's saying this and that, and oh, isn't she terrible? So it's a real
yes, radical is one
sure.
One title, one label hung on people, and it's comical. There was radical, of course, one who goes to the basis of things, and so many of them have been leftist radicals in our time, and even they have leftist radicals. Should be heard. In fact, I like the idea that in the beginning was the word, and that the word is so very important. If there are so many yes. issues to this very day, that if the two opposite sides were listening to each other carefully with what is intended to be said, that they could find a moral common ground, because both sides of the main American situation now, They all have their points. They all have their points to be made, and none of us possess the entire truth. But if we could spend more time, I think, discussing, and instead of denunciations, of course, and countering, but on the other hand, a debate or discussion is a wonderful, wonderful thing. It tends to lead to some kind of a better understanding.
But of course, debate has now become rioting and violence. And in Chicago, oh my gosh, the things that I see, I haven't turned on my TV since March. So I don't listen to TV. I get my news via the internet, or not at all. But I do know that there's been violence in Chicago, and statues, they're trying to tear down statues. excuse me. And there are whole cities that are totally taken over by rioters and people who are destroying. And that's certainly not the solution to this problem. It only creates another problem. And they say, oh, defund the police, get rid of the police. Well, and they're criminalizing or going after people who attempt to take care of their property with a firearm.
Yeah, I was astonished at what was done to that couple in St. Louis who had rehabilitated an old mansion, and that their M15 was taken away from them. That is really a pity.
Yes. And they were simply attempting to protect their property.
Yes. I'm hoping that America, I don't happen to own a gun, and I don't even like one around the house. But on the other hand, I happen to know that if America is going to survive, it will survive because of the number of automatic weapons in the hands of American patriots.
Well, that of course, is why we have the Second Amendment. And is to protect the First Amendment, probably.
Yes.
But yes, I believe that if you take away all the guns, then you are totally at the mercy of the government.
Exactly that. And the government have learned how to manipulate through the news media to get the people to stampede any way they want. We are no longer a free nation because of the takeover of the news media. It's tantalizing. We are so close. Things are so close to being right. They could be so right. Mary and I, in addition to the work you know we're doing, we also did what we could to stop the wars at the time they were being planned and at the time they were being set up, and then even after they went ahead with the supreme crimes, because that's what they are. Unprovoked wars were defined as supreme crimes after World War II. And we spent a lot of time with a Jewish group in favor of the Palestinians. And then later, every Sunday, after being with Jewish Voice for Peace, also called Not In My Name, we would go to the Art Institute and spend the rest of the day at the Art Institute, in front of the Art Institute, that is, carrying banners and handing out leaflets against the then planned and then ongoing wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Israel. And we often got arrested by the police and manhandled by the police. But the police never showed up for any of the court hearings. So these were just crimes, minor crimes by the police. I must say, those particular low-level crimes, ended upon Jim Keating being made the Assistant Commissioner of Police of Chicago. There's a word for it besides assistant. But anyways, he was the second to an adjutant to the chief of police, city of Chicago. He ended the police crimes against us, and we were really grateful. So Mary and I spent something like 12 years out in the public, passing out literature and things, trying to get public opinion away from the war path. And we didn't join, we haven't participated in any of it in the last 4 years, because it has become a political partisan thing, mostly anti-Trump. And we voted for Trump in the expectation that he was susceptible to bribery and might end up being impeached because of his inability to withstand that financial temptation. But we had to oppose genocide, and that was the choice. The choice was between a genocidist, a serial genocidist, and a not yet genocidist. So we went with a not yet genocidist. Calling for his impeachment, we could not join them. We haven't participated in anything in quite a few weeks ago. We went out around Cook County Prison for a day there, That was a nonpartisan thing, and we were happy to participate, but all, we have pulled away actually.
Right.
From the whole scene.
And like you, a lot of other people, I think, voted. Oh, are we going to a break? No?
Up to you.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Maybe they're skipping the break. Anyway, I think a lot of people voted for Trump as a vote against Hillary Clinton, who is, as you say, a serial killer. And not only in other countries, take Benghazi and Libya, and gosh, must be millions. But I just finished reading Mary Trump's book. I thought, and it just came out Wednesday, I think. And I thought, well, I'm just going to read it. I'm going to just see what she has to say. And I wouldn't recommend the book. She does have some, she's deluded about some things. She has some different views of things, unrealistic. But she did say a lot in the book that defined Trump's character, which I thought was, she got that right.
I see.
But the family that he grew up in, his father was a sociopath. It was a very sad situation, and we have a very materialistic family here. So yeah, it's just a very interesting, and we must see too that the things that are happening. Okay, we have joblessness, homelessness, small business closings. Big business has increased their millions, their billions. We have COVID-19, which is a farce. Fauci is still in. Deborah Birx is still in. B-I-R-X, it's the French name.
Yes.
She lost her medical license 6 years ago. And he recently, he said, well, we're going to not fund the World Health Organization. No, he said that. He said, we're going to not fund the World Health Organization. And then he turned around and gave the money that would have gone to the World Health Organization to Gavi, which is the Bill Gates organization.
Ooh.
So he is a turncoat. All this stuff happened under his watch. If he was such a great all of this stuff happened. We're locked down. People are forced to wear a mask. We've got mandatory vaccines coming. Businesses are closed. The suicide rate's up. Little children are forced to wear masks. They're in fear. You have people living in fear. All of this under his watch.
Yes.
He's
and by the way, with there was no branch of government tending to the protection of the people who are actually threatened by it, people 70 years of age and older.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's another thing. The ventilator murders, okay?
Yes.
A ventilator...
Yes.
Is something that they use during surgery, and they put this, and you're asleep, okay? When you have surgery, you're asleep, and so you're not gagging, you're not coughing, but you stuff a ventilator down an elderly person's throat, they're going to start coughing, and ventilators kill people, okay? I know that I'm going to get, you know, people are going to criticize this.
Well, a nurse in New York has been saying that.
Yes. I didn't come up with this by myself. Certainly, I'm not a nurse. I'm not a medical person. I believe in energy medicine, which is the body's own energy system, meridians, meditation, all that kind of thing. I believe that the body's immune system was designed to take care of us. And all these things are destroying our immune system. We have a lot of stresses in the world. We have GMO foods. We have toxic air. We have glyphosate. We have all kinds of stuff, and it puts our body in a lot of stress. But certainly all of this happened under his watch, and people, I don't know why anybody would still support him given all the stuff that's going on. And they keep, and people are saying, oh yes, but he did this or he did that. Well, okay, what did he do? Tell me exactly what did he bring? Did he bring the troops out of Syria? No. The Syrians are
right.
starving to death because of the United States activities in Syria. Did he bring the troops home from Afghanistan so they wouldn't be running drugs anymore? No. Did he lower the troops in Iraq? No. And some people say, well, we're over there keeping the peace. Well, how long does it take to so, you know, people say, oh, we went and liberated Iran or Iraq. Well, how long does it take to liberate? Okay, we've been there for since March of 2003. We've been in Afghanistan since 2001. What the heck are we still doing that? It's because corporations are making big money. Halliburton's over there stealing resources. And you brought up, you mentioned that family, Cheney, who was in charge of Halliburton, who just happened to be vice president when the Bush crime family decided to go in and bomb Iraq. Good heavens. Don't people sit back and think, or they take all of their information from the news and they believe everything without questioning it? Gosh.
You know, that is a very powerful air that is present here on this Republic station. It's very effective, and I'm hoping
absolutely.
It's having an effect. Yeah, it's very apropos, better said. It's needed because
yes,
the rest
is.
Of the news media is in terrible, terrible shape.
I really am so grateful for RBN. I've been with them almost 10 years. They gave nobody a chance to express opinions. I just finished writing my trilogy, or just about finished writing my trilogy. And I thought, okay, now what am I going to do? And I approached John Stadtmiller, and I said, I think you need a woman on your network. And here I am almost 10 years later. And I appreciate John Stadtmiller. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to voice my opinion. And the most important thing that I appreciate is talking to wonderful people like yourself, talking to guests. I have interviewed so many wonderful, interesting people, really interesting people. And it's an honor.
Well, good for you. You're a bright light on this radio station, and we're hoping that you've many, many more years. I'll continue with item three regarding the removal of Ireland's foods, and it was a major military operation. It required more than half of the British Army to perpetrate. 67 regiments were in Ireland out of a total of 129 regiment British Army. It's just a little over half. And they all weren't there for the full 6 years, but they all served at least a few years there and came and went. And they removed all of Ireland's food at gunpoint. They robbed the growers of it on the basis that it was grown on typically 20,000 to 30,000 acre estates that belonged to an Englishman. And the British Army robbed it on behalf of the putative English owners, even though the English owners had nothing whatever to do with the planting, the plowing, the planting, the harvest, anything else.
Oh, Chris,
along
sorry.
With the 67
Chris,
regiment.
Chris, we have a real quick break. I'm sorry. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Nikki, great product. Have to try it for a few months to see results. After taking Extendovite for about 6 months, I have noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from carpal tunnel. I will continue to buy the product. Ken Peaks, 5 out of 5 stars. Works as advertised. This formula is very powerful. Be careful to follow directions. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized and my lower edema has reduced. Lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. Thank you. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Is the Second Amendment your line in the sand? Is the United States Constitution important to you? Are you worried about gun confiscation? You need to join us for free at gunconfiscation.com. At gunconfiscation.com, you will meet like-minded patriots, get the latest Second Amendment news, and find anything you need to prepare for gun confiscation. Visit gunconfiscation.com today. That's gunconfiscation.com. Which side are you on?
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Reaching for a dream of peace.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Christopher Fogarty. The website is IrishHolocaust.org. His book is Ireland, 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It Perfect. And Chris, you were talking about the regiments, the 67
yes.
regiments.
Out of an army of 129 regiments, making it more
yes.
than half, were in Ireland in those years. Their sole mission there was the removal of Ireland's food grown by the Irish. There was no army of English laborers coming in seasonal to grow and plant and harvest and mill the crops in Ireland. That was all done by the Irish people. But it was robbed from them by their English landlords using the British army to rob them. So it involved, again, 67 regiments of the 129 regiment army, and also the police and the landlords' militias. The landlords had militias in Ireland also. There was a large contingent of English people went to Ireland in those years, a support group for each landlord. They would be the police and the militia and the lawyers and the doctors and the saddle makers and the carriage makers, etc. They tended to be almost all English, so the landlords had their own satellite system. There were 37 landlords' militias in Ireland, one for each county, which is 32, and there were two more in Limerick and three in Cork, two in Dublin, and what was it, another one, Galway, I think it was, had a second one. So 37 landlord regiments, all there doing the landlord's bidding. And then the police, there were some 12,900 British police in Ireland.
Oh, my gosh.
Many of the officers were Irishmen, I must mention. I had a first cousin once removed who was shot dead by the IRA. He was following English law, orders through his English officers against the Irish people, and he was shot dead by the IRA. So it just goes to show people are on both sides of issues, and sometimes there's always error, and sometimes the errors are not even known until later. Here's an interesting fact. In Ireland, the British police were called Peelers because they were formed by Robert Peel. And he was called by the Irish Orange Peel because he was an Orangeman, that is a member of the British ascendancy in Ireland. So they were Peelers, and they carried spring-loaded bayonet on their carbine rifles, even though they were just policemen. While in England, they were notoriously unarmed and had the friendly name of Bobby, again for Robert Peel. Both the British police and the Irish police were named for their founder. But it was an ugly name in Ireland, Peeler, to be a peeler, to be a violator of everyone's natural rights. And in England, they were the Bobbies, the friendly men on the corner who would take care of the passing children. So there you have the same police, but on two different sides of an ocean, acting so differently as to have two different, completely different labels. So the recruitment and regiment areas of each of the 67 regiments were all, of course, in England. There were two regiments from the United States in the British Army who were removing Ireland's food, which is mighty interesting. They would be loyalists in the United States, regiments entirely formed by Anglo-Americans, willing to fight for the British in the British wars of colonization. There were a number of Irish named British regiments, and they were mostly comprised of the ascendancy English, but living in Ireland with the name therefore of Irish. Except one regiment, the Connaught Rangers, was a true Irish regiment, that is, made up entirely of Irish men or boys, but they were kept outside of Ireland all six of those years. And the other true genetically Irish regiment in the British Army, the Munster Fusiliers, were not founded until 1881. That's long after the genocide was over. There were many Irishmen in the British Army then, as was my grandfather in 1857, when he was 18, until 1881. My grandfather kept his siblings alive. He joined the British Army. He walked to Abbey Leash in County Leash when he was 18 years of age, joined the British Army, helped to destroy the Maoris in New Zealand, the Aborigines in Australia, and kept the Sepoy rebellion down in India, and retired after 24 years. But he was a servant of the British military in those years, from the time he was 18 until late 40s. And he retired then on a pension of £3.76 per quarter. I don't know how much that is. That's maybe $10 every quarter of a year. Regarding the abundance of Ireland's food crops, see Exhibit B in my book. It shows the amount of food that was leaving Ireland in those years, the ship's manifests of food leaving Ireland for mostly England. Are we coming up for a
no.
another commercial?
Okay. No.
So they were shipped and landing in all the major British ports, from Bristol all the way around the coast to London and up into Glasgow also. Shiploads of Irish food while the people themselves were starving. In fact, many of those vessels would be loaded with Irish food produce, and one half of the vessel, the other half of the shipload would be of starving Irish people. With the starving people and the food arriving on the same ships from Ireland to England. So That's Exhibit B. Half my book is made up of exhibits. The
right.
exhibits are intended in the sense of legal exhibits of evidence of crime, and they speak for themselves. They come right from, they're transcribed right out of British documents. Some of them are the exact, they're photographs of British documents, of English documents. So I'm hoping that people will learn the truth, and the truth shall set us all free. I must say, we're all grappling with the truth. We're all trying to define it, aren't we? Because the truth can be slippery. Sometimes you think you know something, and then with more evidence, it turns out that the reality is more like the opposite of what you once believed. That's certainly true regarding the starvation of Ireland. I had thought that there was some Irish negligence involved, that they mistakenly grew only one potato, only one disease-prone crop. And all of that, well, the potato crop did fail, but it failed everyone, everywhere at the same time. But it was all the other foods that did not fail, that were shipped out in tremendous numbers of shiploads, traveling around the world to the British colonies everywhere. William Cobbett, the Englishman I mentioned earlier, described having served in the British Army in Canada, and he said another 250,000 people arrived in New Brunswick in Canada out of the New England states, people fleeing the new American system, loyalist Britons. And he said 250,000 of them were kept alive in New Brunswick by shiploads of Irish food that was grown by people who themselves were starving, and that the African slaves of the English on the English plantations in the English Caribbean, that those African slaves were being kept alive by food that was extracted at gunpoint from the Irish. I wish I didn't learn the history. It's truly a burden. The world is a very sad place, and we're looking at conditions now that seem to be as bad as our worst nightmares of olden days, before democracy, before we had a republic.
And I appreciate what you just said. Sometimes you think, how could it get any worse? And then tomorrow, it seems to. One of the things that I really, in your book and on your website, on page 175, it's an insert in your book. It's the mass graves of Ireland. And the number is overwhelming. And that's why I want people to visit your website just to see the image of Ireland and the mass graves. And then I want them to, of course, purchase your book so they can get all the details. But this image is just so incredible. So
yes. I must say, as heartbreaking as it is, people have asked me if I would favor demanding compensation, and I really think that some things are beyond financial remedy.
Yes.
Some things are beyond that system entirely. They're into another entire arena that has nothing to do with money, and that's where a genocide is. There's really nothing can be done after it's over. And to try to turn into a money-making effort, I don't think that reflects well upon the very murdered millions.
And reparations, particularly for things that didn't happen, are even worse.
Yes.
But that's another story altogether.
Yes, exactly. On the other hand, I would say, regarding our current situation in the United States, let's at least give good schools to the descendants of the slaves. Let's at least give good schools, good educations.
I think everybody should be well educated, and I think that Well, for instance, in Chicago, the union, the teachers' union, I don't know too much about it, but it's all about the teachers and less about the children. And
yes,
I believe that they asked for
all kinds of support, people to join their efforts when they went on strike. But Mary and I have noticed that for years that the teachers' union studiously avoids all human rights campaigns. They're not interested in anything in the general good. They seem to focus entirely upon more pay for the teachers.
Right, right. And I think the children should be the focus of our efforts.
Exactly.
And that would
also include getting the best teachers and not necessarily ethnically identifiable teacher. I think we really have to go for the best when it comes to getting teachers, deciding who will be a teacher, and keep them on a rigorous measurement and assessment, continual assessment as to their product. How are they doing? How are their students making out? How are their grades working out? And if they're not doing well, get better teachers.
But as you mentioned before, in Ireland, that your instructor, who was a religious individual, was told what to teach and how to teach it. And I believe that that's the same in this country, and particularly since the federal government took over the education Department of Education, which used to be a local situation. And when you turn it over to the federal government, then the federal government, of course, is deciding what is going to be taught. They decide the curriculum, and that's just not fair. That's not right. How can because each section of the country has different needs, different interests, different. I think it should be returned back to the local. Of course, the school districts are now corporations, and so when you picture all that together, put all that together, you think, gosh, the whole system is rigged, and it's not rigged for the benefit of the people who are in the system.
We're learning that, aren't we? How very very true that is. And the taking back of it is the question: how do we go about it?
Right.
So the work is cut out for the people of our country, and an awful lot of what has happened in the last 50 years has to be undone. It has to be reversed.
Exactly. Yes. And it's kind of an amazing thing that when you look back at the Department of Education and who was in charge of that, it goes back to that same name that I mentioned earlier, Rockefeller and Carnegie. They were kind of in charge of deciding what students were going to learn. So, gosh, when you putting that much power into one man, but then he had a lot of money, and apparently money is the focal point. Money seems to be what drives people. Resources, money. It's terrible. There's so many materialistic people who all they think about is money, and it's pretty sad.
Yeah, about 50 or 60 years ago, a number of Franciscan nuns became alarmed at the number of dropouts there were from Chicago's high schools. And so they started teaching dropouts and encouraged them to start over again, to have another attempt. And many of their students went on to college. So over the years, they grew and they had a couple of so-called campuses or schools on the north side, west side, and Chicago south side. Mary and I learned about it, and we became donors to it.
And, that does not surprise me in the least.
Yeah. And it's called Prologue. And the nuns had passed on by the time we got involved, but the people who had worked with the nuns were there. And they were getting funds from both state and federal government to do this, and it was absolutely, inspirational to see these young people going on and going on from having been dropouts to getting a high school degree or diploma and on to college. And it went on until about 3 years ago when the federal government started to run and the state started to run into a cash bind, and they reduced the amount of money they were giving to the Chicago public school system. The Chicago public school system responded by cutting completely all budgets from Prologue.
Oh, wow. We have a quick 3 minute break. We'll be right back.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Did you know that you can be tracked and traced when you're online? With identity theft and cybercrimes on the rise, your passwords, your identity, and even your physical location can be revealed to complete strangers. Would you like to surf the internet anonymously and not have to worry about these threats? Well, now you can by visiting patriotinternet.com. For about $2 per month, patriotinternet.com will conceal your IP address and your physical location, allowing you to browse the web, send emails, and instant message anonymously. Patriotinternet.com will bypass filters, block sites, and keyword blocking. You can also bypass logging by your router and your ISP. With patriotinternet.com, there is no software to install and uses 128-bit encryption for your protection. When using wireless hotspots, patriotinternet.com shields your information from identity thieves and is compatible with Windows, Mac, and Linux. Protect your identity and your freedom with anonymous internet access from patriotinternet.com. Visit patriotinternet.com today.
Our guest today, Christopher Fogarty. His website is irishholocaust.org, and his book is Ireland 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It Perfect. And we were talking about students, and students need to be inspired. They need to be that is so sad. When something is working and something is being productive and students are excelling, to come in and squash that is terrible.
There was also other skullduggery involving the Chicago public schools. Very, very sad. They were trying to force the destruction of Prologue to hand it over to another similar group, But the similar group was money-oriented. They're in it for the money, and they therefore had money that they could use to bribe the people in the Chicago public school system. There's a number of layers of bad activity here that is so disappointing. I must say, I'm not disappointed by anyone in Prologue, the people with whom Mary and I were working, but the other groups who have been trying to clean up by moving in on dropout students and trying to enrich themselves by claiming to do something for them. It's very, very sad. And then, of course, the defunding of the one that was doing the good work, and leaving and putting those people out on the street, and then some of them maybe being picked up by the for-profit groups. It's very, very sad. By the way, a little item here that might interest people from Illinois. When we had our seven lawyers working on trying to defend us against a lifetime in prison that was planned for us by criminals in the FBI, my wife's lawyer was Kent IIT Law School professor David Thomas. Mine was Patrick Tewitt. And we had one of our friends, there were four of us, one of our friends, Frank O'Neill, we got another lawyer for him, and Ann Burke. We recognized this as a political case, and so we hired Ann Burke for him, and then we got a lawyer from Baker McKenzie for the fourth person, Tony McCormick. At a meeting where there were seven attorneys present, Ann Burke, having come back and told me at previous meetings that she couldn't personally do certain work that she had contracted to do, but was going to have somebody else do it for her. We said, that's okay, so long as it gets done. But then she said, well, that person won't do it. I have to give it to somebody else. We said, okay, so long as you get it done. And then on the third meeting of our lawyers, she said, it just has occurred to me that it would be a violation of ethics if I were to do that for you. So sitting beside her was Mary's attorney, a very fine man, David Thomas. He said, no, Anne, I taught you your ethics course in law school, and it would be a violation of ethics if you failed to perform what you agreed to do. But here's the kicker.
Wow.
Anne Burke, the woman that I had to fire for her ethical failure, I had to fire her. Here go another break. Okay.
Okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite, a seven-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendivite. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.